early in recovery, it is vulnerable to talk about our past and our past choices. And we see that a lot at the men's workshop because we create small groups and men are able to share their stories. There is a vulnerability that comes to sharing our past. What I believe is even more vulnerable is sharing our present. To be able to talk about what's going on in me in this moment, the fact that I am struggling, the fact that my recovery feels vulnerable right now, that there's a part of me that does want to act out, or I did just overreact in this situation. When we have the courage to be vulnerable in real time in community, that's when we begin to move out of our loneliness.
Welcome to the Faithful and True podcast. We're back today for part two of a podcast we began last time where the subject of discussion is loneliness. And Dr. Greg Miller, as usual, is here leading the way. And we're happy to have back with us Jim Farm.
Yeah, I like the way you said that.
I tried to give it a dramatic pause. I almost said doctor again, and we've heard people refer to you as doctor. But Jim is the clinical director here at Faithful and True, and we're thrilled as always to have you with us.
Yeah, excited to be here.
So as Randy said, we're going to continue our conversation about loneliness. And, you know, one of the things that we identified in our last podcast is just because you're surrounded by people doesn't mean you don't experience loneliness. And so what we want to talk about in this particular podcast is...
I think that can actually even be more lonely.
Oh, I agree.
When you're around tons of people and you just feel alone.
Right. And I do think that, you know, there are those
Sorry,
times...
Sorry, I interrupted.
No, I think that's great because I absolutely agree that one of the loneliest places is to be surrounded by others and to see or assume others are connected and you are excluded or you're not a part of something. You know, that... one of the seven desires is that desire to be included. And inclusion is a partnership where we are included by other people and we allow ourselves to be included by being vulnerable. Just because I'm invited doesn't mean I say yes to the invitation. And so in order for there to be connection, there needs to be the invitation and then there needs to be the yes, the agreement to go. And I think for a lot of people, part of their life story may be is they didn't get the invitation to participate in community. And so there was never that opportunity to say yes. And then also there may be those situations where they were invited, but kind of like what we talked on the last podcast, because of shame or fears or insecurities, they weren't able to say yes and be a part of something that was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a more difficult part of that too is, you know, if I was never modeled asking for inclusion or asking for my needs, you know, and that didn't happen as a child, but there's sometimes this expectation that others will know I need that and they'll invite me, but I won't recognize actually that probably doesn't happen a lot in adulthood. So I have to kind of take on the responsibility sometimes of looking for that or asking for inclusion,
right,
or asking for connection.
And I think another thing is also and creating what you need.
Yeah.
You know, when we're talking about inclusion, one is that we are included by others, but another piece of that is, and I include others, where, you know, I often tell men, sometimes you have to create the resource that you need for your recovery. And so maybe you're the one that has to create community. You're the one that has to extend the invitation. I mean, you have to ask people to come over. And in my own journey, I know the vulnerability of sending out those invitations to say, hey, do you want to get together? I'm getting some guys over to watch the game or whatever it is. And that sense of vulnerability to wait to see if anybody's going to respond yes. And that's kind of the nature of this issue, is that in order for there to be community and connection, there must be vulnerability. So let's just start with, what does it look like if I do have a community? What does it look like for me to really maximize the experience and steward the community?
Yeah. Well, I think one is what you're talking about. Am I willing to risk vulnerability? Am I willing? Because like we shared in the last podcast, vulnerability invites vulnerability. But, you know, we often hear like guys when they first start a group, if they don't have that structure, you know, you ask them to share their feelings. I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Right.
You know,
Means I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Or I'm not aware of it. For some men, their answer is fine because they've not done that deeper work of self-awareness where they could share something beyond that. They're not connected to whatever's going on inside.
Yeah. So, you know, things like we do in group, we teach guys, you know, actually, what is the language for emotions? And then, you know, once you have the language, then I can maybe connect it with my inner experience as I develop self-awareness. But then we get them talking about issues in their life, you know, and we encourage them to start being cognizant of what their needs are and being able to express those. Those are things that, you know, that they're starting to develop a self-awareness of these things. But then it's a whole different thing to begin to be able to express those, because now I'm putting myself in risk.
Right. Well, and again, we said this in the last podcast, and I also want to say it again here. This isn't just about men looking for community. This is also women who are looking for community.
That's right.
That for a lot of women, they feel isolated and feel loneliness. And I think I often talk to people about this idea that think of your story as far as vulnerability on a scale from 1 to 5. 1, I'm not vulnerable at all. 5 is I'm completely vulnerable. Well, the wise person is able to be a good steward of their own story, recognizing that not everybody can handle that level of vulnerability, their 5. And there are other times where they're holding back and the people in their life can handle more. If we're going to think of people on a scale from 1 to 5 in vulnerability, we can also think about communities in the same way. Uh-huh. Just because I'm a part of a community doesn't mean that community welcomes vulnerability. Now, there are groups out there. They get together weekly. They gather. But the nature of their conversations are fairly superficial. Maybe they talk about sports, weather, and maybe it's even a spiritual context. But there's not a lot of vulnerability in that. Well, if you step into that space, maybe sharing at a level 5, and that's not the context of the group, that can feel awkward for everyone. And so sometimes we have to get a sense of how deep are these people able to go or willing to go. But what's absolutely true is if I find a group that is willing to and can handle a level 5 vulnerability, then it's up to me to choose that for myself. Another thing I tell people is you may be in a group, you know, and it could be a recovery group that's supposed to be about vulnerability. But what you're aware of is people really don't share everything. It's kind of that thing we talked about in the last podcast. Maybe everybody's holding on to their last 20 or 10%, whatever the percentage is. And maybe you risk and go a little bit deeper, and that invites others to come and meet you at that place. But again, it's about being wise and being intentional to see where are those safe places that I can be known fully and also be safe. Because everyone needs those safe spaces where they are known at that level 5 vulnerability.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes, you know, what will happen, you know, especially with either gals or the guys that come through our program is, you know, it's kind of new to them and it's kind of exciting to be known for the first time. And maybe they share too much to someone that, you know, actually ends up hurting them.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it can, you know, almost impact them. Like, it was easier when I didn't share anything.
Right. Well, and one of the things that we often hear, especially people early in recovery, is they start to identify the people in their lives that they shared something with that they wish they hadn't. And I think we've all had that experience, kind of like what you said. We may be, in our enthusiasm, shared something that the other person wasn't ready to handle or wasn't able to handle or didn't know how to be a good steward of. And like you said, they were hurt by that, and then they become skittish or cautious. And so we want to encourage people, even if you've had a negative experience in vulnerability, it's essential that you push against that and push through that so that when you do have those safe people in those safe places, you have the capacity and the courage to share. One bad experience shouldn't stop us from seeking it.
No, I think it's part of acceptance that, you know, that is a part of relationships that, you know, even if they are safe people, there will be instances in which the safe people sometimes wound us.
Right. Well, and it also teaches us our resilience. You know, some of us have lived with this fear that if somebody knew me more fully and they left me or they abandoned me, I wouldn't be able to survive that. And sometimes we have these experiences where they are difficult and they are painful. And yet what they teach us is that we can survive, that doesn't have to define us. And it gives us a sense of resilience that makes it possible for us to continue. Because this idea of community and connection is essential to healthy living. If we're going to be the men and women that God created us to be, we must be in community. That's part of God's design.
Yeah. I had this client years ago. I'll never forget this. She was a professional artist, right? And she had some medical issues. And we talked about this because she had a hard time risking vulnerability. And so she brought, she had some medical issues, which wasn't allowing her to finish her artwork. And so she brought in this half done artwork. And, you know, I'm not an artist. So when I see good art, I kind of get excited. I'm like, I wish I could do that almost.
Right.
But as she was leaving, I go, man, you got to finish that. But I kind of said it out of excitement. And so when she comes in the next time, I mean, it's like a few weeks later, she sits down and she's like, you know, arms crossed. She goes, I'm angry with you. And I'm sitting there in a few minutes, I'm going, man, what did I do? What did I say? And I was free. I was kind of like, what did I, and I couldn't think of it. And I'm like, gosh, you know, thank you for sharing. But I honestly could not remember what I did that might have offended you. And she goes, well, you told me last time when I left that I had to finish this artwork. And then it dawned on me, I did. And mm-hmm. I thanked her for saying that, but that was hard for her mm-hmm. to do that.
Right.
You know, it took her a lot of work to risk that vulnerability.
Yeah. And I think that that's part of how we get out of loneliness is that if I discount everyone who's ever hurt me, if I discount anyone who didn't meet my expectations relationally, then I'm not going to be able to be in relationship with anyone.
Yeah.
I worked with one person and their pattern was to go invest in a relationship, connect deeply. And then if that person ever did something where they didn't respond to a text, if they didn't follow through with something, if maybe they were cold or callous in one moment, the person took it incredibly personally and then just shut that person off as a way of self-protection. And we have to have the resilience to continue the relationship and pursue the relationship. Now, there are those people that are just not safe. And if they are not safe, then there is wisdom in separating ourselves from them. However, there are people who are predominantly safe and every once in a while do something clumsy. And there are times where we may be oversensitive and misinterpret something, and it really is more on us than them. But even in those cases, it's important that, like your client did, come back to that person and say in a very vulnerable way, I'm very angry or I'm very hurt, and hope and trust that we can figure this out. There's something I need to be heard and understood about.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of maybe is a segue to, you know, how can we be lonely in a marriage?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think a big part of that is, you know, if we've avoided conflict. You know, because oftentimes we think conflict is like, that's a negative thing in a marriage if you have conflict.
Right.
You know, where conflict can actually be a very intimate thing. Because remember, if we go back to the definition of intimacy, which is knowing and being known, in the midst of conflict, if we're allowing ourselves to be known, we're still being intimate.
Right.
It might not actually feel good all the time, but it is intimacy.
Yeah.
But see, this is where it can go off the tracks for a lot of people because we've thought that, you know, relationships should be intense, like in a good way, like right. good feelings. And if it's negative feelings, it must be bad.
Right. Well, and there's this idea that if there's conflict, it must be a bad relationship. And conflict is not the enemy of intimacy. Kind of like what you're saying, it's our ability to navigate the conflict in a way that leads to greater knowing and connection is actually something that supports intimacy. And so if you grew up, and I would say that this was part of the messaging that I had growing up, is that, you know, in my home, I don't ever remember except for once my parents fighting. That doesn't mean that there wasn't tension. I could pick up the tension. There just wasn't fighting. And so I get married and believe the same thing. And so I'm doing everything I can to try to accommodate Beth. She never asked me to. I just felt like that was my responsibility. But what that means is if I'm constantly placating somebody, I'm not showing up in the relationship. There was an experience I had one time early in my career. I was on staff at a church. One of the older members was coming through something, and he said to me with a lot of pride that he and his wife had never had an argument. And even as a very young, naive person, I knew intuitively that's not healthy.
Yeah.
Because if you've never had a conflict, then somebody's not showing up in the relationship. And sometimes it's both people, or sometimes it's one person that's kind of acquiescing and placating. But again, if you're lonely in the marriage, it may be because there's some issues that need to be discussed. There's some old hurt. There maybe is resentment and bitterness that's never been acknowledged. And it's important that in a safe way, maybe with the help of a counselor, a couple can get the support that they need to move towards some of those topics that have been off limits for so long.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly it. It's, you know, when you're in a marriage where somebody's holding back, you know, they're not being known in that area, and it will kind of lay down the roots for loneliness in the long run. And so it's really, you know, learning to be able to, these things, you know, are pretty impactful. Like, we have to move into conversation and be known around that. That doesn't mean, by the way, that we have to come to an agreement on everything.
Right.
As well.
And I think that that's one of the mistakes that we make, is that in a good marriage, we will always come to an agreement where we will never have even an argument about how to resolve something. But sometimes it's about compromise. It's about someone who is willing to say, okay, I am willing to go along with you in this, versus I always have to have my way, and we never are able to make progress around certain issues or topics.
Yeah.
I think another thing about loneliness in the marriage, and this is really, I think, geared towards many of the people in our audience who have experienced relational betrayal, and their spouse struggling with sexual addiction, there was acting out, there was secrecy. And what's true is, in the relationship, there isn't a lot of safety. You remember the idea that I talked about in the last podcast? We have to be safe enough, to be vulnerable enough, to be connected enough that we're willing to try it again. But if my spouse isn't owning his or her actions, and in our case, we work primarily with men who struggle with addiction. So if the husband isn't owning their choices, their addiction, the consequences of that, and ownership isn't just acknowledgement. Ownership is, I acknowledge it, I create a plan to change, and I implement that plan. Then what's true is, for the spouse, it's not safe. And so that lack of safety warrants some separation and distance, kind of some healthy detachment. And that healthy detachment can also result in loneliness. And sometimes loneliness in a marriage is an indication that someone is making a wise choice. It's a painful choice, and it's a wise choice.
Yeah, yeah, it's indicative of, you know, something's not right right now in this relationship. Mm-hmm. And so it's like we talked about in the last podcast, is paying attention to that emotion of what is it telling us.
Right.
Or even the couples that, you know, end up doing a redemptive separation. One of the key things that most spouses on both sides will probably experience is a degree of loneliness.
Right.
And so it gives them an opportunity to, how do I work through this emotion and the needs that it represents?
Yeah. And what is the loneliness I'm experiencing revealing or exposing something about me? What can I learn about myself because I'm actually experiencing loneliness in this situation? And it can be clarifying, but it can also help me to understand whatever my next right step may be. You know, back to this idea of loneliness in community, we both lead groups. And one of the things that I can see is, there are those men who, for the most part, show up and are connected when it comes to the group meeting time, whatever time that is. What they struggle with is maintaining those connections outside of the group. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, well, if I'm in the group, everybody's there, I have my opportunity to share, I'm given permission. And there's a risk because I'm going to share, but there's not a risk of inviting someone to connect with me apart from the group experience. And the men that really seem to do well and are successful in their recovery are those that are willing to risk and find ways to connect outside of the group experience. Because of just the nature of what I do, all of my groups are online. There's no in-person groups. And one of the things that really does just bring me joy is when I hear about men that don't live anywhere near each other, but find themselves in the same place and they go to dinner together. Or I've had groups that have organized and they planned a weekend together. And the risk that it takes to say, hey, let's do that. But I think that those are the communities where there is this sense of connection and that awareness that if I am experiencing loneliness, through a text, through a phone call, through a Zoom conversation, I can connect with somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is key. I mean, that is, you know, it's not like school where I show up once a week, you know, for this class or whatever,
right.
You know, but it's really approaching group as, you know, these guys are in it with me, or if you're in a women's group, these women are in it with me, and we're connecting, we're building relationships, you know, we're working at this together. You know, if something doesn't go right, I'm thinking about reaching out to them.
Yeah.
You know, and I am reaching out to them.
And it's out of a place of desire.
Yeah.
Not I have to do this, or, you know, the group leader told me to do this. But what's getting nurtured in me is I see the value of community and I actually desire that connection.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to recognize, even if you're in an established group, you know, whether it's a in-person group or an online group, it is still a risk to reach out to somebody and share with them, to ask for that connection. And a pattern that I've seen is early in recovery, it is vulnerable to talk about our past and our past choices. And we see that a lot at the men's workshop because we create small groups and men are able to share their stories. There is a vulnerability that comes to sharing our past. What I believe is even more vulnerable is sharing our present, to be able to talk about what's going on in me in this moment, the fact that I am struggling, the fact that my recovery feels vulnerable right now, that there's a part of me that does want to act out, or I did just overreact in this situation. When we have the courage to be vulnerable in real time in community, that's when we begin to move out of our loneliness.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the fun things that we hear in group, you know, where a guy, you know, called because he had an issue at work. It doesn't even have to do with the addiction or his recovery. It's like, I got an argument with my wife. Help me through this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's literally approaching life with a bunch of men or in women's groups, you know, things aren't going well, you know, where they're connecting, being known once again. But like you said, early in recovery, you know, I always tell guys when they leave the men's workshop, like my friend, the groups, when we do the small groups, I always tell them, you know, be the first guy to reach out.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk yourself out of it, because a lot of guys early in recovery, if you wait, you're going to talk yourself right out of it.
Right. Well, yeah. And this is one of those places where all of our old core beliefs get triggered. You know, I've been in recovery for 18 years. I have this amazing group of men that are in my community, and we reach out, we connect, and we talk, all of those types of things. And I can still have those old messages of don't be a bother. You know, that was one of the big family rules growing up, that you're not supposed to be a bother. You're not supposed to get in somebody's way. Or it could be a message of insignificance. I don't matter. You know, why would they want to hear from me? And it doesn't matter how much reassurance I get of, no, we want to hear from you. We welcome your text. Yeah. It's more this idea of, I've got to believe that. So my resistance is not about the community. It's about me and the work that I need to do to continue to heal some old wounds. Mm-hmm. So even for those of you that have been in recovery for a long, I just want to validate, you may still have those messages of, well, it's not that big of a deal, or I don't want to bother them. They're busy doing something else. And I mentioned this earlier, but, you know, and we allow the men in our group or the women in our group to respond in whatever way they can. You know, it's interesting. I know of guys who really they risk, they put it out there, they send that text, and then they don't hear back from anybody in their group for a while. And immediately they tank and it wasn't worth it. And maybe what's true is none of the guys respond. But I want them to understand you risking has value.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, in many cases, the guys will be able to respond and say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm busy, or I didn't have my phone with me, or I was doing something else. But even if you don't hear back, to affirm that fact that I'm the one that took the courage, I'm the one that reached out. And also, I'm going to have grace with the guys who didn't reach back to me, because I know that they have their own core beliefs. They have their own fear. They have their own shame. And so I can't just have people in my life that respond perfectly every time. I also have to have grace with those people who don't necessarily show up the way I was hoping they would. And I can have a conversation with them about that, how that was hurtful. You know, is that ability to repair when people don't respond the way that we would like for them to.
Yeah. And like I said, I think that's to be expected. I always kind of give the analogy for guys in my group is, I mean, Jesus experienced this himself. He's like, he brings Peter, James, and John because he's not married. to the Garden of Gethsemane, and he just said, can't you just stay awake? And they don't.
Right.
And he even says it. He says, you know, your spirit's willing, but your body's unable. So in other words, he's saying your finiteness, your humanness is getting in the way of being present for me. You know?
Right.
And so it's a clear example. And I know we're going to get into this, actually. I should just get into it now. Should I get into the spiritual component?
Right. Right. Absolutely.
So this whole story of the Garden of Gethsemane, so he brings his buddies there because he doesn't want to be lonely. But they fall asleep, and the Bible actually describes them as being in agony. And in this word agonia in the Greek, it's the only time it's used in the Bible. And it's this kind of this word that kind of describes this solitary, very emotional, painful kind of turmoil. You know, actually, it's the same word that was used to kind of describe the men that were waiting to take on the gladiators. Mm-hmm. If that gives you any kind of visual mm-hmm. of what he's going through here. But the whole thing about Christ's crucifixion for me, I think, is the greatest promise of the whole Bible, is I will never leave you nor forsake you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the word never, I love the word never because it's absolute. And the way it's
finite.
Written in Hebrews 13:5, it's written in the emphatic kind of version, which means never, 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 continuously.
Right.
And what did he say right before he died? Is, my God, why have you left me or forsaken me? That's what he actually took for us.
Right.
So that isolation, that loneliness, Christ actually experienced that. The other thing I want to kind of follow up with, Greg, is you know, there's this belief in the Christian world that God won't give us more than we can handle. There's nowhere in the Bible that it says that, actually.
Right.
It says he won't allow us to be tempted more than we can handle. But in fact, I think the Bible actually says we will actually go through things more than we can handle. That's why he says, you know, let's carry each other's burdens.
Right. Yeah. The very nature of it is too much for me.
Yeah.
If I'm trying to do it all by myself, it is too much. That's why I need the community. And the idea of functioning community, the reason it's so essential for recovery and just, you know, spirituality, is that I must be in community to experience grace, because it's through people showing me grace that I experience God's grace. And it's in community that I'm able to shed those lies of shame. And so for those people that think they can function well and not be in some sort of healthy community, it's just not possible. And it's not because you're inadequate. It's because of God's design.
Mm-hmm.
That it is in the community that we experience God's grace and love. And so therefore we are transformed. And so this idea that I do have to be willing to risk, I have to be safe enough, to be vulnerable enough, to experience enough community so that I can be transformed. That's how we move out of the isolation into the community that helps us not be lonely.
Yeah. And by the way, when we're fully known, our brains actually release oxytocin, the bonding hormone, that reinforces that connection.
Mm-hmm.
So God designed us that way, like you said earlier.
Right.
That's a great point to end on,
right
there. So, Jim, thanks again for being with us today on the Faithful and True podcast. It's always great to have you with us. And Greg, as always, thank you for leading the way today. For those of you that are watching and listening, we thank you for joining us. We hope that the message of this discussion, a two-part podcast about loneliness, has been beneficial to you and opened your eyes to some realities in your life. If you have become aware of the need for the work that we provide here at Faithful and True, we invite you to visit faithfulandtrue.com. Check out all of the resources there. We have over 400 podcasts like this one. And we also have other resources available. All the books by Mark and Debbie Laser are available there, as well as the information and online registration capabilities for our Men's Journey Workshop, our Women's Journey Workshop, and the two Couples Journey Workshops that we now offer. So please check those out at faithfulandtrue.com. In the meantime, we pray that this coming week for you is going to be filled with many blessings and with great visions.